Hello, friends. It's your old pal, Ariel Helwani, back with another edition of DC and Helwani. And of course, we have a lot to talk about this week. UFC 259 fight week is upon us. Fantastic pay-per-view card this Saturday. We got to talk about Ciryl Gane and Jairzinho Rozenstrike, a bunch of title fights booked since we last spoke. But before we get to all of that, do want to let you know about the Baseball Tonight podcast with one and only Buster Olney. It is back Monday through Friday. Yes, every day. You can be sure to check out his brand new episode with Dr. Anthony Fauci, who talks about the feasibility of having a full baseball season, which kicks off in a little over a month. And Buster also speaks to World Series winning manager Dave Roberts of the LA Dodgers and his counterpart in the other dugout, Rays manager Kevin Nash. Not Kevin Nash. Kevin Nash is a pro wrestler. Kevin Cash. That's the Baseball Tonight podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Also, if you didn't know by now, Stephen A's World streams weekdays on ESPN Plus, bringing fans Stephen A. Smith's entertaining perspective and deep expertise along with signature guests. The best interviews from Stephen A's World are now available as a podcast every Wednesday. So listen wherever you get your podcasts and watch Stephen A's World on ESPN Plus right now. All right. On to today's program, and as always, a reminder, listener discretion is advised. Enjoy.
Now making their way to the microphone, DC and Helwani.
I'm not trying to butter you up. Did you lose weight? Because it looks like your face
I'm wearing a black shirt. You got to be very careful with the shirts, you know? But no, I have not lost weight.
Here's Daniel Cormier and Ariel Helwani.
Back in your life on this first week of March 2021. Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to a brand new edition of DC and Helwani. Of course, that's DC, Daniel Cormier. I'm Helwani, Ariel Helwani, DC, my man. I'm excited. We got a huge pay-per-view coming up on Saturday night. There's a lot to go and discuss on today's program. Are you excited as well?
I'm so excited. I cannot wait. Whoa. I mean, the voice.
What's going on?
Now, listen, the voice is a little beat down. I'm not trained. I went and coached my wrestling team yesterday, and I'm not trained to coach. So yelling and screaming doesn't really work. I lost my voice out there.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
You were yelling at the kids.
The Gilroy Mustangs and my 15U Mustang team. We went out to Bullhead, Arizona, and wrestled some of the best teams in the country. And the high school team got beat by Lake Highland Prep in the semifinals, and then the 15 and under team won the tournament. So we got third in high school, first in 15U. So, I mean,
Seems like a great weekend.
When you're Nick Saban, when you're trying to be Nick Saban, you don't be happy for, you know, those results. If you're
third place is not good enough.
You know, we want to win. We really want to try to win, man. At some point, we want to be considered one of the best teams in the country, and getting third place ain't that. But, you know, honestly, I was proud of the effort the kids put out there, but we could be better.
So you're out there screaming, yelling, cussing them out, chewing them out. I mean, total Bobby Knight on them.
Absolutely. Absolutely crazy. Hey, actually, it wasn't the Gilroy Mustangs. All right. I'm sorry. It wasn't the Gilroy Mustangs. It was DC, Daniel Cormier's California custom team.
Oh, wow. Oh,
by law,
you.
I am not allowed to call them the Gilroy Mustangs. They're not in season, you know, so. Yes, it was DC Wrestling, California custom team.
Oh, excuse me.
Composed of most
right.
of my kids.
Wow, that's wrestling. Very complicated. Thank you to Cassandra for that note and saving me there. Very nice. All right, so third place, not bad. Your other kids win, not bad at all. Third place, by the way, very, very close to, I believe.
But so far away.
No, but very close to what I think the New York Knicks are right now in the Eastern Conference.
Oh, I saw it. Oh, my goodness. I saw it this morning. I was like, wait a minute. They're 15 and 14 and they're in fourth place.
18 and 17 to be exact. Fourth place.
18 and 17. Fourth place in the East. Everybody's losing their mind. Like, come on, Ariel. You guys must be. You're happy.
I was dancing this morning. I was legit. I got out of bed. I'm not a morning person. I was legit dancing this morning, not only because of my New York Knicks, but also DC. We've been doing the show for almost a year. You know how I like to, you know, say, oh, you know, I'd be remiss if I don't wish you a happy.
Yeah.
There has never been a list quite like today's list. There has never been so many holidays on a particular day. Sit back and enjoy this. In Paraguay, DC, I'd be remiss if I don't wish you and yours a happy Heroes Day. If we were in Mongolia, I'd be wishing you a happy Patriots Day. But it gets better. If we were in Wales, D.C., we'd be celebrating St. David's Day. Of course, today is a very important day in Bulgaria. It's Baba Marta Day.
What?
And now we get into the good ones. We are kicking off Women's History Month. So shout out to all the women out there. But DC, it is also National Pig Day. We don't partake in that, my Jewish people, because we don't eat the pig. But I hear it's a fine, fine food.
Very good. It's really good.
DC, today is also National Dagum That's Good Day. It's National Peanut Butter Lovers Day as well. It's National.
That was too many.
There's a couple more. It's National Fruit Compote Day. It's National Horse Protection Day. It's also National Minnesota Day. And most importantly, to you and your team, DC, I say happy National Compliment Day. I just want to tell you how much I love you and how much you mean to me, DC. I mean, come on. Have we ever had a list like that? I don't think so.
Wait.
Sometimes what is dadgum that's good day? What exactly is dadgum that's good? What does that even mean? I don't even know. Is today a good day? Like, what is today?
Dadgum that's good day. Oh my God, I'm sweating. It's so
many.
Oh my God. National dadgum that's good day.
And World Compliment Day. I mean, here we are as we kick off UFC 259 fight week. You know what?
You had to have been losing your mind.
I've been waiting for this day since we started, because this is our first March 1st that we've ever done the show. DC, in the spirit of National Compliment Day, I want to give a compliment to Ciryl Gane. You know, a lot of people have been very mean to Ciryl Gane over the last 48 hours. Oh. Ciryl Gane, who has only been competing in mixed martial arts for 2.5 years, who is 30 years young, who's fighting in the main event against Jarzinho Rozenstruik, one of the most lethal strikers in the sport, pitched a shutout, a dominant 5-0 performance, cementing his spot as one of the top heavyweights in the world. And what does he get for all of this? He gets insults. He gets criticism. He gets kicked while he's supposed to be up, but I guess he's down. I think that all the criticism that Ciryl Gane, the Frenchman, Bon Gamin himself, received on Saturday night, up until this point, is unfair. In all honesty, I think people were very mean to Ciryl. What do you think?
What did you say? What's his nickname?
Bon Gamin.
That's good. That's good.
It was a good performance. Wait. Listen.
Oh, my God. Your ability to try to act as if Ciryl Gane fought a great fight. Dadgum, that's good on this day. I'm telling you, man. Oh my goodness.
How did he not? Jarzinho Rozenstruik, loss in his MMA career, got knocked out by Francis. He pitched a shutout. What's wrong with that? What's wrong with doing what you need to do to win a fight? Why is it incumbent on the guy who was winning to make it an exciting fight?
Sometimes, now I've been on the receiving end of this, right? Maybe not to this extent, but it's not only about you winning the fight, but at times you got to put on a performance, especially in those big spots. You know, even though it may be unfair, Ciryl is getting compared to Francis. And when Francis does what he does to Jarzinho, and Ciryl, although pitching a shutout and fought beautifully, the jab was fantastic. The space management was fantastic. The wrestling that he showed at times was fantastic, right? He showed a full skill set. But when you have a guy like Francis, who finishes fights in the ways that he does, people will get compared to him, especially when you're the next guy, you're the next thing. You almost are obligated to fight at a certain way, and he didn't do that. Now, I remember when I fought Frank Mir way back in the day. It was a bit of a snooze fest. We hugged for 15 minutes, and I was on top of the world. I won my first UFC fight, co-main event, Big Fox. Saw Dana on Tuesday at UFC Tonight, and he said, oh, this dude's hosting this show right now? And they're like, oh, yeah, you know, good stuff. He goes, somebody said, well, he fought Saturday, fought good, and he wasn't too beat up. He goes, I wouldn't call that a fight. He goes, I wouldn't even call that a fight, right? So Dana's very open and honest with
his assessment of the performance. And I think he held back on Surreal. He could have said more, but you know, when you're supposed to be the guy, when you're the next guy and you're put in these big spots, you have to take advantage of them.
Okay. Did we forget that not that long ago? I mean, it was almost around the same time. I think he actually debuted the following month, if my memory serves me correct. Francis Ngannou and Derek Lewis, who's all the rage now coming off the Curtis Blaydes fight, once produced one of the most boring fights in the history of the UFC heavyweight division, maybe even the history of the sport, promotion. And it's okay. Like, to me,
you could have a fight like that.
Yes.
You just can't have him all the time.
But he hasn't had him all the time.
No, he hasn't. But I'm saying he just knocked out JDS, beat Jarzinho. But again, it's what happens right now, right? We're not 6 months removed from him fighting Jarzinho on Saturday. This happens Saturday. And look, man, you could do much worse than winning a decision that people think was boring. You know, I mean, you could do much, much worse, right? You could lose. You can get slept. You can get, you know, there's so many bad ways to come out of a fight. So if you're Surreal, you're saying, hey, it might not have been a barn burner, but I won. I'm getting a bump in the rankings, and I'm continuing to move towards my ultimate goal of being the UFC champion. Here's what's the scary thing. What's the scary thing, though, Ariel. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Here's the thing. The way Surreal fought on Saturday, it might have been boring, but that fighting style, his ability to maintain space and distance, engage when he has to, is a problem for everybody.
Right.
And I think that's what kind of is scary, you know, because he could do that to just about anybody.
So up until this point with Surreal, again, 2.5 years in the sport, 5-fight winning streak in the UFC at this point, longest active streak in the heavyweight division. Up until this point, we've seen him on the ground, surprised a lot of people with his submissions, even almost pulled off a standing guillotine in that fight. We've seen his power, and now we've seen that he can fight a composed 25-minute fight. The story coming out of Saturday, in my opinion, was we've got a legit new prospect or even player at heavyweight. Oh, and also, the story should be, why didn't Jarzinho show up? The criticism shouldn't be about Surreal. Jarzinho was down 3 rounds to none, 4 rounds to none, and never even pushed the pace. I mean, you would think if you just watched the 5th round, you would think that Jarzinho was up. To me, the criticism shouldn't be on the guy who was up 3-4 rounds to none. It should be on the guy who needs a finish to actually steal this one, a guy who's further along in his career than Surreal. Why aren't we talking and criticizing Jarzinho more than Surreal? That's the part that I don't understand.
I think when you look at Jarzinho and you look at how bad he got knocked out by Francis, you know, first time he had ever lost, it's a sobering thought to think that it could happen again, right? Mm. And when you're in there with a Surreal gun that has done the things that he's done, it does put you on notice. Now, Jarzinho got hit with a big jab in the very first round. It was a nasty jab that snapped his head back, and that seemed to almost – slow him down to the point that he wouldn't do anything more because of the risk of running into another punch like that. It really felt like that one jab hurt him so bad that he was like, man, I don't want to run the risk of getting hurt and knocked out by this dude. So, you know.
But he is coming off a win. It's not like he's coming off that knockout loss.
Yes, but still, let me tell you something, Mario. When you get knocked out like that, it never leaves the memory. You don't forget that. You don't forget. I will never forget the night that I got knocked out by Jones. It just doesn't, it does not happen. You constantly are reminded of that when you step back in there. The good memories last, but the bad memories haunt you and they don't leave you because you don't want it to happen again. So, you know, it takes the mentality of Jarzinho didn't seem to want to go back to that place. I think in order for a fighter to want to go back there, they have to be willing to accept that it may happen again. And not everybody can do that. And, you know, he seemed tentative. He seems a bit afraid. And he was very open with himself the moment the fight ended. You know, I always talk about this. When people go to Instagram right after they lose a fight, at times it's self-aware. At times I feel like they want fans to console them for not living up to expectations or what they thought they were going to do. Because regardless of what you do, right? Win, lose. You win a fight, the fans congratulate you. You lose a fight, they feel sorry for you and they uplift you, right? They don't let you down, man. People that support you, fans, they really do make you feel better about yourself when you really shouldn't. When you lose, you should have to deal with those emotions of really letting everybody that work hard for you down. And I think those guys run Instagram to find that comfort.
On that note, could I ask, what is it like to, I mean, you're in a cage with another human being, right? You pour everything into a training camp. You're not thinking of the fight, entertaining or not. You're just out there to win and survive. What is it like to pick up a big win? Because you also experienced this against Anderson Silva, right? And then you go back online, or you hear people boo, you go back online, you see people criticizing you, calling you bum, or even you lose and someone's like, oh, you know, here's my Venmo account. You need to send me $30 for my parlay. What is that like? Does that make you want to break your phone?
Not necessarily, right? What Surreal's dealing with right now is, for Surreal gone, he needs to think about every, he'll see what we say, right? Sees what Dana says. He'll see what you and I say. There'll be a few fans that'll be trolling him on his Instagram and Facebook, all that stuff, Twitter. But the noise that bothers you and affects you is from your contemporaries, from me, from other fighters, from the boss. But then he has to just look at that and go, it could be much worse. I won the fight. I fought the fight that I wanted to fight. So regardless of what everybody else thinks, I am fine. And that's what he has to do. But for me, it was like, you know, you beat Anderson Silva on 2 days' notice and you go and you wrestle him and you do what you do. He's kind of go, you know what, man, I got the victory. I won, you know, made money, fought one of the best fighters of all time. And you just got to kind of go forward with it. The best in a bad situation, in a situation that turns out to be bad, that was the best case scenario and outcome for me. And for Surreal, if he just has to hear that people are like a little let down with the performance, if that's the worst that comes from it, he's a happy man.
Yeah, and again, I would remind people, he's a neophyte in this sport. 2.5 years in this sport. He's only going to get better. And I'm happy you brought up the money. There's a large discrepancy. Imagine he's up 3 rounds to none, and he's like, you know what? I need to make this exciting. And then he gets knocked out.
Yeah.
And you're like, number one, you are a dummy. Number two, you just lost half your pay because of the pay structure in this sport. Like, there's just a lot at stake. You go all the way down the rankings. You got to work your way back up. You have to deal with the emotional scars of getting knocked out. Surreal did nothing wrong. Sure, some fights aren't as exciting as others. But to me, if you want to blame anyone, we have to blame Jairzinho for not pushing the pace. And maybe, you know what? Jairzinho couldn't figure out the puzzle, and that's okay. Yeah. They can't all be vicious knockouts like, you know, Blades and Lewis of a week prior.
Well, when you look at Blades and Lewis, Curtis was in his face, right? Willing to take risk. He was beating him in the stand-up and understanding that one shot from Derek could end the night, right? Even though he's been knocked out twice by Francis, he's one of those guys that was able to put the knockout in the background. And look at what happened again, right? He could have just wrestled and probably won the fight. But, you know, people look at it differently. I got to be honest, Ari. It was boring. It was a boring fight, Surreal Gane and Rozenstruik. But if I'm Surreal Gane, I'm happy because the alternative is much worse, losing. No, it's because when you match up fights, right, everybody goes crazy. Oh, this is a banger. This is going to be great. They don't always turn out to be what you expect them to be.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I'm not saying, you know, let's put this.
It was a boring fight. You gotta say it. It was boring. Did you finish it?
I finished it. I was actually watching the Canelo fight at the same time, and that was a glorified sparring match. This to me was, you know, a tactical affair involving some big boys. I was curious how Gane would perform in a main event, 25 minutes against a great striker like Jairzinho. I had no problems with it. And now, quite frankly, I'm wondering: do you give him Volkov? Do you give him Lewis? I mean, I feel like those are the only two options for Surreal at this point.
I feel like for Surreal, the reason they're so much just like let down is because that seemed like a matchup made for him, right? Because of his style and then Jairzinho's style. Those matchups normally deliver. They just didn't on Saturday. Looking forward for Surreal, and I honestly would probably put him with Volkov.
That's a great fight. I would put him with Volkov.
He's a big guy. Volkov's a big guy. The winner could potentially fight for the championship. I just should tell you, Derek Lewis is just so dangerous for everybody, man. I think you got to be careful. But I think he competes well with anyone. He competes well with Derek. He competes well with Volkov. But I think the Volkov we saw versus Overeem versus this Surreal Gane, great fight.
Yeah. I wonder what they're going to do with Derek. I wonder what they're going to do with Surreal. The good news is, the heavyweight title is being defended next month. And then we know that John Jones is waiting after that. It's not like they needed to produce the number one contender coming out of this fight. And all of a sudden you're left with a guy coming off a boring fight. Like, it's okay.
Isn't that the beauty in it though, right? Like for weeks we go, well, what happens to this guy next? Curtis right. 2 weeks ago. What happened? What do they do with Curtis if he beats Derek Lewis? Now Derek Lewis has won all these fights in a row, and Derek's like, what do they do with Derek? Like, where's how long does he have to wait for a title fight? You watch this one, you realize that Surreal is very tough, but you're not pining for him to fight for a belt.
I can't wait for Jones to move up. I love the trolling on Saturday. I mean, did we forget about the Reyes fight, the Thiago Santos fight, the Anthony Smith? Like, he's talking about if he's going to move up. Hey, I hope we see knockout artist John Jones. I would love nothing more.
John Jones will not knock out anybody. He doesn't hit hard enough. He never. If he could knock these dudes out of 205, he's not knocking these heavyweights out.
I mean, he looks big. You see that video of him?
It doesn't matter if you put looking on weight. Yoked. Like, it's still, bro, it still takes punching power. Why do you think, like, why do you think Derek Lewis can lose 30 pounds? See how much leaner he is and mm-hmm. still knock people out. It just, it takes power. Like, it's not just weight. It's not just weight that adds power. You see guys at heavyweight that can't knock people out. There was once an idea that Kane didn't punch hard, but Kane had more knockouts than anybody until Derek passed him just recently. So, like,
right.
it's crazy how the perception, but I'm telling you from experience, Jones doesn't punch very hard. Kicks hard, knees hard, but mm-hmm. his punches, those heavyweights are going to – that's going to be an issue for him once he fights the heavyweights because they know, right? They know that he wasn't producing knockouts down at 205, so they'll be a little more willing to kind of just try to walk him down to get to him.
Well, the bottom line is heavyweight is very, very interesting right now. So shout out to Surreal Gunn. Shout out to all the other heavyweights that fought this past month and won. Magomed Ankalaev with a nice win. Pedro Munoz and Jimmy Rivera had a tremendous fight as well. Alex Caceres, Alexis Davis, my fellow Canadian Ronnie Lawrence. So all in all, fight night, maybe not the best one of all time, but it was another fun Saturday night, especially with the boxing going on. And shout out to those two kids that jumped in the ring behind Canelo wearing Jake Paul and Ben Askren t-shirts.
You saw that's Canelo, who, though? You saw where Canelo was?
How about the one where that kicked him out was Canelo, of all people.
How did Canelo see him, though? Canelo's like, did you see him through the camera? I mean, did he see him through the camera?
He saw their shirts, and he's like, hey, guys, get out. And then they just walked out.
No promotion.
By the way, those guys posted a video blog last night, and it's kind of scary how they got in. Like,
easy.
They didn't have to do anything. Yeah, and they literally got in. Thank God they didn't do anything to Canelo, but like, wow, it's kind of crazy that they got in there.
It's when stuff goes crazy. Well, first off, that's why you see very few people in the octagon after a fight.
Yeah.
They try to limit the amount of people in the octagon because you can't really keep up with everything that's happening. In boxing, it always amazes me how many people are in the ring. There's like 30 people in the ring every time a guy wins a fight, celebrating, hugging, standing behind the guy doing the post-fight interview. It's hard to control that. It's easier to control the guy standing next to the octagon, calling five coaches.
Yeah, you won't see that.
When it got crazy, when Conor and Habib fought, there was a dude in there checking on Conor. Conor, are you like, like, this is the fan that was behind me asking me who would win the fight. So it's like, when it went crazy,
I forgot.
You remember that? The dude's like, ABC, hey, who's going to win? I'm like, bro, come on. You really got to. And then we're in the octagon trying to stop him from fighting. And this dude's like, hey, is Conor okay? I'm like, what is going on? Like, what is happening in this world? You know, like, how did you get in here? But he just followed. When there was pandemonium, you can't control it. And I think in boxing, there just is too much of that looseness in regards to the post-fight interviews.
Okay, plenty more show to come. We've got to talk about some championship fights coming up, of course, 259. But first, DC.
What's something that works so well that it's basically magic? Air conditioning, noise-canceling headphones, meeting-free Fridays. Well, what about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch at your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-order stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're auctioning autograph apparel or selling sleek skis, Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/DCRC. All lowercase, go to shopify.com/DCRC now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/DCRC.
Now, Daniel, you're muted right now, so you're talking and I can't hear you. I mean, golly. You're still muted. This is your first day on the job. Now you're back.
Listen, I must have bumped the microphone, but use the code Ariel, right?
Yes.
There's something that went, you know, we don't have the same person that does that. So this tells me that you in your self-centered way is telling them to make the code Ariel. The world wants the code to be DC Ariel. Once.
No,
give them what they want. Give the people. You know how Jalen starts the show every time? You know how Jalen starts the show? Give the people what they want, Ariel. Give them what they want. Just one code DC. It's not that hard.
Well, we can work on it. You did allude to this. So shout out to TST, who's moving on to future endeavors. Hello to Christina, who's now the new TST, the new podcast producer of DC Hawani and Ariel Hawani's MMA show. So it's very nice of you to give her a shout out. It's a new era. And DC, we have some other things to talk about before we get to 259. Last week, a busy one in terms of filling out the spring schedule for the UFC and also getting some other chapters. You know, we got five title fights in March. Five titles will be defended in March. What we found out in April, April 24th, which will be UFC 261. Some early talk of it being in Singapore. Now it looks like they're going to go back to Las Vegas. But we're hearing Valentina Shevchenko against Jessica Andrade, flyweight title, phenomenal fight. I reported Friday, Zhang Wei Li versus Rose Namajunas, all but done, also on that card. So you got the two, two of the greatest female champions of all time on that card, going up against two very, very dangerous opponents. And then I also reported June 12th, Brandon Moreno versus Davison Figueiredo, number two going down at UFC. That would be 263.
What's 62?
Well, 262, I'll get to in a second. But first, I want to ask you this. So of those three title fights that were essentially made / finalized last week, which one intrigues you most?
All right. Now, here's the answer. Now, it might be a little bit surprising because we saw Moreno and Figueiredo produce a classic.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to say Valentina versus Andrade. I got to be honest.
Interesting.
I think that this is the biggest challenge to Valentina. I think Andrade is going to challenge her in ways that we haven't seen for a long time. But it's a different challenge than the fights that she lost to Amanda. Because with Amanda, they're striking, and the striking is very competitive, and it's razor thin as to who won. Andrade will give her looks that she hasn't really had to deal with. She'll get pressured. She'll get taken down. She's going to get all that the defense tested. She's going to feel power. Jessica Andrade is a beast at 125, and I can't wait to watch her fight Valentina. Now, love the Figueiredo rematch, but as we've seen, very few classics produce rematches that live up to the first fight. So I'm not as excited about that one as I am about the girls' flyweight fight.
I think there's no wrong answer here, to be honest. I love the fact that if you actually go through every division in the UFC right now, every upcoming title fight is really interesting. Like usually there's one or two where it's like, this guy or this gal got pushed into the title. Like everyone is legit in my opinion. So 2021 is going to be a lot of fun. My pick is actually Zhang Wei Li versus Rose Namajunas. I love watching Zhang fight. We haven't seen her since her fight of the year, almost exactly a year ago, March in Las Vegas. So this will be her return fight against Rose, who looked amazing, I thought, against Jessica Andrade, the former champion, trying to get back in there. Remember, there was some talk of Rose not wanting the fight. That was all hogwash, all negotiations. She wanted the fight. She just wanted some, different things monetarily. I'm happy that it looks like they got this done. And you can't go wrong with those two title fights on April 24th. I want to see a decisive winner in the male flyweight title fight. I love it. But the Zhang Wei Li fight for me is a really interesting one. And so you asked me about May, by the way. Now we're starting to get some clarity, because if you go through every single weight class, you know, we got the five divisions. Okay, let's just do a little fun game here, DC.
Okay.
The heavyweight title is being decided on March 27th.
Yep.
The 205 yep. pound belt is going to be decided this Saturday. 185 is Izzy. He's not coming back yes. that quickly. You know, he's not going to come back in May. I mean, he likes Usman. To be active. Maybe that's Usman. A little. Yeah. Usman and Masvidal, we're hearing per Masvidal, either August or September. Again,
which would mean that they're going to do the Ultimate Fighter.
Yes. And as I told you last week, don't get worked. That fight is yep. still the fight. So that's not happening, right? 155, we could get back to that. But we certainly know that Khabib isn't fighting in May, yeah. right? Ramadan and everything involving his retirement. 145 is Volkanovski. He's March 27th. 135 is this weekend, Piotr Jan. 125, we know, is June 12th. Mm-hmm. Let's go to the females for a second. 145, Nunes. This Saturday. 135 is Nunes. She's not coming back that quickly. 125, we know Shevchenko. 115, we know Zhang Weili. That means in May,
there's no champions.
There's no champions. That means Conor McGregor may get his wish. That's against the fight Dustin. In May against Dustin. Against, here's the problem.
Only way.
Here's the problem. They're a little bit far right now.
In terms of negotiation?
Yes. And so I wonder if they want to hold that one off till July. Maybe fans, International Fight Week, Las Vegas, big arena, or Florida, like we saw Canelo, there were 20,000 people at that stadium, or Texas. I think they want fans for Conor McGregor. All I'm saying is you kind of have a sense of the upcoming title fights. We have it all there. May, there's a big gap there in the schedule. I would suggest that either May or July, we'll see the return of Conor McGregor. The clock is ticking on May, so it might have to be July. But right now, Conor wants that fight. Dustin obviously wants that fight, but they don't have a deal just yet.
Well, because who else do you main event a pay-per-view with that doesn't have a title? Because every pay-per-view outside of Conor always has a champion. And as That's you it. Said, there are no champions available unless the decision part three is a real decision and then Khabib relinquishes the title. Listen, you know, if they actually maybe do a lightweight title fight in May, then you could say, okay, this is what we're doing. So that gives another option.
You know, that's a really good point, because historically, they don't like to make that move unless they have to. Lest we forget, very good line by Max Holloway last week. He said, the only reason I got a featherweight title fight was because DC sneezed and blew his back. That's the only reason it happened back in Toronto. So maybe they're looking at the schedule and they say, hey, we can't get this Conor Poirier fight done. Conor's sticking to his guns. Dustin's sticking to his guns. But we need a title fight in May. Maybe we do Charles Oliveira versus Michael Chandler or something like that. That's not being discussed. I don't want anyone to get crazy and write an article off of this. But just saying, that's a really good point. And Khabib's back. We're getting another sit down. Are we going to get another announcement on the pay-per-view this Saturday?
I don't know if it's going to be to that point. But Khabib will be at the fights, right? Islam's fighting. And, you know, dude's back in the U.S. for the first time in a long time. So, maybe there'll be some clarity, you know, maybe there'll be some clarity and maybe there'll be like more clarity after this weekend, because I really do believe that whoever wins that fight between Dober and Makhachev, they're going to show that they're really viable. They're going to get a title fight right away. That's going to put them in the top 10 and very close to some real big fights.
Sure. I thought you were going to say, like, let's say Izzy wins in 10 seconds. They can have him turn around, but there's no available middleweights. That's a good segue to our 259 mega chat that is coming in a matter of moments. But first, let's get a couple ad reads out of the way here and pay some bills. Want to tell you quickly, you know, DC, this is a byproduct of being a really popular show. There's a lot of ads that want
good,
to be.
That's good.
And
that's
I don't
good.
Know, Christina's first day on the job already. We have three ads. I mean, I don't know if that's good or bad, but anyway.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So that entire buildup and no code. No,
listen, I'm reading this on the fly.
No code. Here like it's gonna be DC. But I have faith. Christina's gonna get me one. I can feel it. We all can feel it. Team DC can feel that we'll get one, Ariel.
We shall find out. For now, though, let us turn our attention to this weekend. I presume you'll be there in Las Vegas.
Yes, I will be there. I mean. Let's hope that I'll be there. Nothing happens. You know, I went in public yesterday. You know, I generally don't go in public.
Oh, geez.
Man, I'm hoping I'm there. I want to be there. I want to be at the fight. I want to be there for the epic night that is UFC 259.
Yes, and let's also pray to the MMA gods that this card remains intact because, you know, usually one or two fights fall by the wayside as fight night approaches. But this is a phenomenal card. You got three intriguing title fights. Let me address this right off the bat. Let me address this. Israel Adesanya. Some people are giving me crap for this. I was on SportsCenter. I have been asked.
So could you please tell me
what
happened? Because I've been saying it right the whole time.
So that's subjective.
I've always said, when you were telling me, Daniel, it's Israel Adesanya.
Adesanya. Adesanya.
I was like, no, Ariel. It's Adesanya. No, it's very disrespectful that you won't call this man by his family name. I said, Ariel, it's Adesanya. It's Adesanya. And then you kept saying that until you got the call from top. Got the call from the top. And what did they tell you? Ariel, what did they want you to call Israel?
Here's the thing.
Wait,
Stop.
Just answer the question. What do they want you
to call? No, I can't answer it because then people are going to stop listening.
Just answer the question. What do they want you to call Israel?
Adesanya.
Adesanya. So now we just go forward. We don't need all the backstory.
No. We need the backstory because for the first time in my life, Daniel, in my prestigious life, being right was actually wrong. And that hurts, you know, because I always thought being right is right. I was always told that being right is right. But here's the backstory. In short, I was saying it the right way. Izzy himself has reached out to me on numerous occasions to thank me for doing what I had to do to get it right, for putting it out there. Unfortunately, not everyone else was going by those rules. And we here at ESPN want to get it, you know, in one sort of uniform way. We want to all say it the same way. And so we called up his manager, Tim Simpson, and said, okay, what would you like us to do? Do you want us to go the Ariel right way, Adesanya, or do you want us to go Adesanya like the other Americans? And he said, well, you know, Izzy appreciates truly how much our TLC Helwani puts into saying his name. However, he has come to the conclusion that everyone's saying Adesanya. That's how they were introduced to him. And so he's okay with Adesanya, and we are going to go with Adesanya. And so I have relented. I'm standing back, but I want everyone, including Israel, to know that I respect his name and the proper pronunciation of the name, but I will say it like everyone else. I'm standing down.
You said, here's the explanation in short, then went on a three minute rant about.
I just want people to know how much this means to me. It's important.
You could have just said and took it on the chin and been, you know what, man, I was in this instance, it didn't work out for me. So we'll call him Adesanya. But instead, 3 minutes. I mean, I'm looking at the clock right now. You went 3 minutes on how you were right. And you just show once again, Ariel is Ariel. I can't be right. You don't want me to be right ever.
No, what's next?
That's why I have no codes. That's why
John Błachowicz. No, we got to say their names the right way.
No, Jan Błachowicz.
Błachowicz, yes.
Błachowicz.
That was good.
Respect to the champ, right? Respect to the champ. Like Błachowicz. Jan
Błachowicz. It's a W. Yep.
Bois, not blah.
Yeah, Bois.
Oh, yeah, Błachowicz. It's part of my job, you know.
Anyway, I'll just refer to him as the last style bender because it's going to be hard for me to reprogram my brain. Let me ask you this. Three title fights, 205-pound belt. Izzy moving up, trying to become just the fifth fighter in UFC history to hold two titles simultaneously. First, of course, Conor McGregor, some guy named Daniel Cormier, some gal named Amanda Nunes, and some guy named Henry Cejudo. That's it. In the illustrious history of the UFC, only been done four times. No one's gone up from 185 to 205, 20-pound jump, big jump. Only, you know, rivals your jump from 205 to heavyweight. That fight against Jan Błachowicz. Then we got Amanda Nunes versus Megan Anderson, the former Invicta FC featherweight champion, or Piotr Jan versus Aljamain Sterling. Which of those three title fights intrigues you the most?
You know, come on. It's kind of hard, right, when it's the double champion and everything.
That's fair.
You know, but when I think about it, and we put that title where it's supposed to be, right, obviously everybody's most excited about the main event. But when I look to the card, I think about Aljo and Piotr Jan. It's such an interesting matchup, right? It's such an interesting matchup to see how this young champion handles a difficult puzzle like Aljamain Sterling to crack, you know. But, you know, obviously, you know, the title fight. But this 135-pound fight, man, it's crazy.
Okay, so let's start with the title fight at the top, the main event. Izzy moving up, relatively thin frame, is not going to bulk up, his coach Eugene Behrman said, just going to pretty much show up. He is what he is. He'll probably be around 205. Jan's a bigger boy. Izzy's the big favorite. I think last I checked, minus 225, something like that. Are we not giving Jan enough respect going into this fight? Does this feel like it's the Izzy coronation? And we're just, why are you rolling your eyes at me?
Because I'm guilty of it myself, right? Okay. We've done it. Like, remember, Jan was mad at me earlier in the summer.
Yes.
The things I said. But it's been like that from the moment he became champion. Here's the issue. We as talking heads and the fighters that want to challenge him and everybody that overlooks him, all it does is serve as motivation for him to go and continue to prove people wrong. So it's like all you're doing is fueling the fire of a young man that has done and reach the pinnacle of his sport, right? So, yes, he's underappreciated. Yes, he's being overlooked, and he absolutely has the chance to win this fight on Saturday. So, yes, to answer your question, absolutely, absolutely unbelievable, exclamation point, yes, this dude is underappreciated and underrated.
And so I'm wondering, we talked about John Jones moving up and you know, what you lose when you move up. What do you think Izzy moves? By moving up, like, but don't forget, Izzy fought at heavyweight
in
kickboxing. I mean, big guy, tall guy, lanky guy, not the biggest guy like that, but I mean, the guy is used to moving up and fighting bigger boys. Does he lose anything in your opinion by speed, power, something?
Not a thing.
Not a thing.
I think Israel Adesanya will be the same guy that Eugene Behrman and him see every day in the gym, right? When you go to fight, Ariel, and you train your body at a certain weight, you want to hit that certain weight come fight night, because in your training sessions, you know what you look like at a certain weight. Me at 205, 222 pounds was absolutely perfect. If I could hit that point and still feel as though I was full and healthy, I knew I could fight great. Izzy knows what he looks like at 205. So that's what he'll weigh on fight night. He probably weighs about 200 pounds, 205, when he's fighting at 185. I think we'll see the same as that guy. Like, there will be no difference in Izzy on Saturday opposed to when he fought Paulo Costa in July. He did look a little thicker, a picture he put up recently on a bike or something, but it's just like he's just keeping his muscle. He's not cutting it off and sucking the water down to make 185.
Sometimes when someone moves up, like we saw this with BJ Penn when he moved up to fight George St. Pierre, and you know, like, so BJ went from 155 to 170. And I think some fighters will be like, oh, I don't have to push myself as much. I don't have to train. I don't have to cut the weight. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't feel like that's a thing with Izzy. Like, I don't think at all. Right?
Well, everybody, you fall trapped to that, right? Like, so at heavyweight, it was easier to train because you didn't have to go through fat camp to get smaller. But by going through fat camp to get smaller, you're putting in so many extra workouts. You were doing extra work that made you better. And I believe that Israel will probably be more willing at times to maybe not go for that extra run because you have to lose a couple pounds. Or you may not, you know, instead of going 10 rounds on the pads this time, maybe he'll do like 7 or 8. It won't be much difference because the guy seems so motivated. But it may be little small differences because you don't really need to push. Maybe they'll put more of an emphasis on rest and recovery as opposed to when you're fighting at the weight class lower, because that's one thing we, or people ignore as fighters is how important it is to allow your body to recover instead of just beating it down, beating it down, beating it down. Izzy now, without the weight cut, can focus more on that.
Do you think there's a chance he wins this fight, looks fantastic in doing so, his days of fighting at 185 are over?
No, I think he'll go back. I think 185 is – that's his optimal weight class, right? I believe, honestly, fighters should cut a little weight. I do. I know a lot of people don't believe that, don't think that.
Why?
I just think it puts you in the weight class that you're supposed to compete in. Everybody can't just fight at whatever they weigh. That means Max Holloway would be an 85-pounder. You know what I'm saying? That means Habib would be a 205-pounder. I think guys need to fight, cut a little bit weight. You know, I think it's good for you. It's good for getting prepared and guys putting the best version of themselves out there.
Interesting. I just look at the 185 division. Obviously, he's gone through a lot of those top guys, Robert Whittaker, Paulo Costa. By the way, do you see this interview with Paulo Costa saying that the reason why he lost was because he was drunk and or hungover because he couldn't fall asleep the night before on fighting? Like, I don't want to make a joke about it, but this in terms of like the post-fight excuses.
It's an absolute joke. Why do you want to make you? I don't want to make a joke. It's a joke.
It's what's the joke? He's making a joke or it's a joke that he said that?
It's a joke that he said that. He was drunk before a title fight. He's out of his mind. Look, man, this dude, Paulo Costa, he's going to kill me when he sees me. Because this dude says some of the dumbest stuff I've ever seen in my entire life. I don't know who is advising this young man. He's going to say he's drunk. Remember, he says some stuff the first time after the fight. He said some crazy stuff. Right? Give me a title fight. Why would we ever
sign the contract?
Why would you get come on, man. Come on, Paulo Costa, sign the contract. For what? We just saw what happened when he signed the contract. Now you're talking about being drunk? Hey, Ariel, this is the stuff you say the day after. Oh, man, I got drunk because you didn't have time to think up an excuse. It took you 6 months to come up with you got drunk. You drank too much wine.
That's crazy.
Who told him to put that out there, man?
What about, like, can you take NyQuil or something like that if you can't go to sleep?
You don't want to do that and make you drowsy. Okay. Just lay down in bed. You just can sleep in the day if you need to. You can't sleep at night, sure, so sleep all day. It don't matter. You can just sleep. Like, Eric, you are up from the morning until you don't go to the hotel, to the venue when if it's a 10 o'clock fight night. You don't go on the East Coast. You don't go to the venue till 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah, but this one was Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, but still, in Vegas,
yeah,
the pay-per-view starts at 7. You don't go to the venue till 6. Right. He's in the main event. So this dude didn't leave the hotel till probably, 4 o'clock in the morning the next day. He's out of his mind, man. Somebody needs to slap Paulo Costa. Somebody needs to slap Paulo Costa and be like, yo, stay away from the microphones, dude.
Could you imagine him drinking a full bottle of wine?
A full bottle of wine. I mean, where is his team? They're probably sitting there drinking.
Where's Valid at? Come on. No, there's no way Valid.
Valid pouring the wine. Valid.
No, there's no way Valid. Hey, there's no way Valid.
Where is Valid, man? What is Valid doing, man? Hey, listen, Ariel. He's fighting. Paulo Costa's fighting.
Robert Whittaker.
When?
April
17th. That's the one you said was on ABC?
No, that's April 10th.
Okay, hey, I was about to say, if he on ABC, let's not interview Paulo Costa. Like Paulo Costa says some crazy stuff on ABC, man. Everybody going to be looking at the UFC like they out their mind.
Well, reason I brought him up, by the way, was because I think Izzy might look at the 205-pound division and say, like, oh, there's new challenges here. And, you know, at 185, I beat Vettori. I beat Paulo Costa. I beat Robert Whittaker. Let's see what happens in the Darren Till fight. But there's just so many. I mean, there's just so much. And for Jan, I think there's more pressure on his shoulders going in here because even if Izzy loses, he goes back down to 185 and he's still the champion. So let me ask you about Sterling and the other Jan, Piotr Jan. Dominic Cruz, your broadcast colleague, who's also fighting on this card, and we'll get to him in a second, broke it down and essentially said, if you look at Piotr Jan's only loss against a guy named Magomed Magomedov, who now fights in Bellator, there might be a blueprint there for Aljamain Sterling. And if you look at Piotr Jan's, I'm just asking you, I want to know your expert opinion here. If you look at his list of opponents in the UFC thus far, Jose Aldo, Uriah Faber, Jimmy Rivera, John Dodson, Douglas Silva, Deon Drudge, Jinsoon Sun, and Teruto Ishihara, not a lot of grapplers in that bunch, right? Does Aljo have the secret to beating this guy? Because I feel like in terms of the skill set, we haven't really seen Jan against someone like Aljo.
He hasn't been pressed in those areas. He got all the way to the championship without having to fight a guy like Aljamain Sterling. You usually come across one of those on your way to a title fight, a grappler that can wrestle. I mean, and the level of wrestling that Aljamain possesses is better than most people thought. He wrestled Roman Bravo Young recently, who's one of the top wrestlers in college wrestling right now. And Aljamain lost by a point. No, he lost by criteria. The score was tied, and the Roman Bravo Young won on criteria. This kid's number two in the country in the NCAAs. So Aljamain possesses very high-level wrestling. With that being said, I've watched Piotr Jan break people down. I mean, it does not seem that it's happening, but it's happening right before our eyes, right? Like, the fights look competitive, and then all of a sudden they're not anymore because he's just constantly just breaking you down. And he doesn't have the style that's crazy explosive, right? It won't wow you, but he's going to be in your face, punching you, kicking you, body kick, low kick, jab, jab, 1-2. Just like Jose Aldo, right? First couple rounds was super close. And then by the third round, we're looking at Aldo like this dude exhausted. He's beat up. He looks like he cannot even stand anymore because Piotr possesses that type of style. Whereas the fight goes longer, pace stays the same. He continues to touch you up. And then eventually you kind of melt. But it's if Aljamain can get him down early and make him grapple while they're dry, I don't know if this dude's walking out of Vegas with that belt.
I know styles make fights, but Aljo doing what he did to Corey Sandhagen early when they were dry, to me, is so impressive and will only continue to get more impressive over time. Of the three title fights, to me, it's the hardest one to prognosticate, yeah. Right? Well, that's the one I'm having the most trouble with.
That's a tough one. That's a tough one to pick. The light heavyweight title fight's tough to pick. The girls' title fight, tough to pick.
There's levels to tough to pick. What you like? I mean, look, with all due respect to Megan Anderson, Amanda Nunes is the greatest female fighter of all time. Yes. And my concern for Megan is, and look, this is what I just referred to earlier with some people getting pushed into title fights before they're truly ready to fight for the belt. I don't know if Megan Anderson is truly ready, but she is a product of a division that's so shallow. It's more shallow than my community children's pool, right? I mean, like, there's no one there. And so you win a fight, you get pushed. Felicia Spencer was awesome, but wasn't ready for a title fight. I think we could both agree on that.
Yeah, she was.
I don't even know if there's anyone like, I thought that this fight was the end. This is what's interesting about this fight. Megan Anderson is on her final fight of her contract, DC. How rare is that? You never fight for the belt when you're on the final fight of your contract. So they thought, okay, look, Megan wins this fight. We'll then do a new deal with her, champions clause, all that stuff. If she loses, all right, thank you very much, women's featherweight division, we're done. But here's the weird part. They just booked Felicia Spencer against Danielle Wolf, who won on the Contender Series. So I don't even, at 145, so I don't know what's going on with this division. All I know is Amanda Nunes is running out of options, and her next fight is most likely going to be at 135 if she wins this fight. If she loses, you're going to do a rematch right away, obviously.
I watched Valentina Shevchenko win her fight against Jennifer Maia and then beat Caitlin Chookagian earlier in the year, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I called it and sat there and said, maybe we could have Valentina and Amanda just fight each other over and over again, because it just seemed like the only fight that was competitive, right? Because she was just dominating everybody. And if you look at what Amanda has done and the improvements she's made, it's hard to pick anyone over her. You know, I watched that Cyborg thing the other day. Just came across the TV and I was like, I remember this, like exploding out of my seat. Because it was the one fighter you thought that could beat Amanda, this new Amanda. And she just dominated her. Now, at 35, you know, I thought Jermaine Durandamy, while they were on their feet, did good and earned some respect. But then look, Amanda just showed that she could take her down and grapple with her, right? It was like she has just improved to the point where does not seem like anyone can really compete with her. And for Megan Anderson, she has to approach this area like she's not fighting just another person. And I know you can't make it bigger than it's supposed to be, but this approach needed to be a little bit different than all preparation to everything else she's ever done. Because I know we try not to put people on a pedestal, but Amanda's on a pedestal, and rightfully so. And they should approach that with that thought. Hold her in high regard, because by holding her in such high regard, it will make you do even more than you would have done normally. If her fight camp looks similar to anything she's done before, she's in big trouble. I mean, what are the odds to this one, though?
That is great insight, by the way. And you don't often hear people say that. Right now, according to I see minus 1205 for Amanda. I see some plus 700, some plus 812s. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of in that vicinity. I think Megan's best shot, catch her early. She's got power. Knock her out, obviously.
Big. She's big,
strong, easier said than done. And look, we've seen some crazy things in the sport. No one thought Matt Serra would finish GSP. No one thought Holly Holm and probably foolishly thought she could beat Ronda Rousey. So we've seen crazy things. I don't want to disrespect her, but I think of the three title fights and of the three challengers, she has the biggest hill to climb on Saturday.
Yes, absolutely. She will make history if she can get this done.
Absolutely. Oh my
God. Her name will never be forgotten.
Absolutely. One of the biggest, if not the biggest, upset in UFC history. So your boy Islam Makhachev is back. Khabib is back. Drew Dober, man. I know you guys are waiting for the heir apparent to Khabib. Drew Dober is for real. And I think people have forgotten because he hasn't been very active. This is a really tough fight for Islam. How confident are you guys?
It's a very tough fight for Islam. I haven't really been in Islam's camp, spoken to him a couple times. Dude seems ready to go, man. You know, if Islam can put together what he does in the training room in actual competition, nobody will beat him. He's that good. He really is that good a fighter. And I'm hoping on Saturday he can really show his true self. He's had some tough fights, and Islam has constantly shown improvement in the octagon. But this is a big spot for him. Drew Dober is a beast, and I've seen him compete lately, and he seems to be getting better. But boy, that's a big, big spot for both young fighters. But, you know, I got to go with my boy Islam.
I will just say, I think Drew Dober is not getting the respect that he deserves from the odds maker. This one opened up as Dober being a plus 330. Now he's around like a plus 270 or whatnot. This is a tough fight. I feel like this is more of a pick'em. Am I crazy?
I don't think it's a pick'em fight. I think when you look at the styles and Islam's ability to take him down and control him on the ground, it's hard to call it a pick'em fight. But Drew Dober is live, right? Drew Dober is a live dog. But, man, Makhachev possesses great striking, great grappling and wrestling, and he's just great cardio, you know. So I believe that the odds, while they may have been a little high to the blind eye, are probably in the right vicinity.
And I'm very high on Islam, and I think he could be a future champ. All I'm saying is Dober's won 6 of 7. The only loss in that stretch was against Beneil Dariush, who's looked amazing as of late. Yeah. So this is a really good – I love this fight. I am also very intrigued by the return of Dominic Reyes. First time since 2014, DC. First time since 2014 that Dominic Cruz fighting in a non-title fight. First time since 2014 that Dominic Cruz is fighting on the prelims. It was against Kei Mizugaki back in the day that he fought on the prelims in a non-title fight. And here he is fighting a young man named Casey Kenney, who's won 3 in a row. Everything to lose in this fight for Dominic Cruz. Not a lot to gain, because I think the casual fan would be like, oh, Dominic Cruz, of course he's going to beat Casey Kenney. We're going to learn a lot about where he's at in his career on Saturday, in my opinion.
Absolutely. You know, he goes through Casey Kenney and beats him in the way that we've seen Dom beat up and coming guys before, then you go, okay, Dom's still who he is. But if he goes and he struggles, or if by chance he loses to Casey Kenney, you know, you start to question what is next for Dominic Cruz. You know, Dominic Cruz is smart. He's a great commentator. He's got a great mind for fighting. So there are a ton of opportunities out there. But this is one of those spots that you watch a man go into and you know that he's at a crossroads. And I know people will say, oh, you know, Dominic Cruz, he's like 36, maybe 37 years old. Mm-hmm. But, man, there's a little bit of a difference in 37 and being a champion for 10 years like he was prior to just kind of fighting. You know, this guy has motivation at a level that a lot of people don't have or aspire, or dreams that he aspires to reach that a lot of people never could even imagine. So him losing a fight like this weekend won't sit well with Dami. He will do some soul searching if it doesn't work out his way, but I have confidence in Cruz.
When Dominic Cruz won the UFC title, Casey Kenney wasn't even fighting pro yet. When he won the WC title, I mean, he was nowhere near fighting pro. I mean, this guy has been around. He has overcome so much in terms of setbacks and injuries, fighting on the prelims. I love his attitude. about fighting on the prelims. Who cares? He says, everyone's all worked up about this. More people are going to see me. I don't get paid more fighting on the first fight of the pay-per-view or the last fight of the prelims. I do want to ask you very quickly about him saying he's going to ask the Nevada Athletic Commission to not have Keith Peterson as his referee. Now, we don't know if Keith is assigned to this card, but we've seen this before. Brock Lesnar famously said he didn't want Mazzagatti refereeing his fights. Did you ever face something like this where you felt uncomfortable with a referee in there? And did you ever ask a commission not to have a referee in there?
That's a horrible question to ask me because there was a time, and then it's like, you look at it and it's like, oh, he's on this dude. Then I got to see this dude.
Oh, okay.
It's like terrible, you know, but like,
Dom doesn't seem to mind.
Dom does not care. Dom don't care. Dom says some crazy stuff about Keith Peterson. He says some crazy stuff about Keith Peterson. He's the man. He's crazy. But I remember the first time I fought Jones. He was hooking my glove and like grabbing, like reaching inside my glove and stuff really quick. And I was like really upset about it. And I was really upset at Herd. And I before the second fight, I was like, yo, I don't really want to have him officiate again because, you know, he was seeing these things and wasn't saying nothing. So I did it one time.
But was Herb in there for that one? For the second?
First fight, yes. First fight.
What about the second?
I think it was John McCarthy.
Oh, so they listened to you?
Yeah, they did.
Oh, wow.
John McCarthy. Okay. Yeah, because the first time I just did that, it was like, I was like, yo, he's grabbed my glove. We're in the clinch, like a very veteran move.
Sure.
Because at times I used to do, like when Frank Mir, I fought, it worked to my advantage. And I think Herb was refereeing. But when I was fighting Frank Mir, I would lift him with the hook and I would grab the top of the cage.
Oh my gosh.
Keep him in place. But nobody said nothing. They just kept letting me do it. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to grab it again. So it was like, but then when he was, you know, we were in close, we were hugging because we hugged a lot the first fight. He would reach inside my my wristband and kind of pull my glove so I couldn't get my arm back. And I was like, grab my glove. It's like, but nothing's wrong with that.
Savvy move.
It's very savvy, right? Like, it's a very savvy move. Like, hey, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
Hey, that thing with Frank Mir, like when you're holding down, that's the only time in your career, like you were holding on to something for leverage, right?
That's the only time I've ever held anything. Well, I was like, I would go up like this and my hand would happen to touch the top. And then when the ref would switch to the other side to catch me, I would just put the other hand, you know, just switch the arm.
That is savvy too.
Yeah,
by the way, did you have to like fill out an application to not have him?
No, I just told the commission.
Okay. Andy Foster, the man.
Huh?
Andy Foster.
Daniel, I got to tell you, Daniel.
we'll take it under consideration.
Well, we'll consider it because I mean, that Herb Dean, he's a good referee. He's a good official.
One of the best in the business, Daniel.
Business, Daniel.
I love Andy Foster. What a guy. What a card.
Why does he sound like that? He sounds like
he's from Georgia.
He sounds like he's from the middle of Oklahoma, bro. Well, Daniel.
The gold standard when it comes to commissioners in this sport. We also have Thiago Santos versus Alexander Rakic, a very important fight at 205. The return of Song Yadong, Joseph Benavidez against Askar Askarov, also on this card. So France.
I love those types of names, you know, Askar Askarov.
Magomedov.
Like, I like absolutely love those names. You know, like, listen, Khabib Nurmagomedov is a great name.
It's a tremendous name.
What if it was Nurmagomedov then? It's like, what? Nurmagomedov is undefeated? Like, wow. That'll be – it's the only name better than Khabib. Nurmagomedov.
That is good.
That would be good, right?
Talk to – I'm assuming you're going to see him this weekend?
Yeah, I will. I'll go see those guys this week when I get there.
Well, tell him I say hi. Tell him I'm fighting the good fight for him over here on this part of the fence.
I will definitely
see. I mean, just leave Khabib alone. Hashtag leave Khabib alone. All right. On that note, DC, a pleasure as always. I hope you get your voice back before Saturday. You should stop talking for the rest of the week, right?
Yeah, I would try to, but then we'll end up on the phone this afternoon. Nugget.
Good luck to you on Saturday. Enjoy 259. Hope you feel better. Thank you to everyone who continues to rate, download, subscribe, and review to this program. Back next week, same time and place. Until then, we say, hey, right.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football. and what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.